They want to help, but they don't know how. Teach them how to stop bullying and be more than a bystander at stopbullying.gov. A message from the Ad Council.
Did you know what you put on your lawn can potentially harm our local waters? Hi, I'm Rory McNish, and this is a Cornell Marine Moment. Living on Long Island, we have a responsibility to our marine habitat. As we take pride in caring for our lawns, we may inadvertently be harming marine life. Applications you put on your lawn, such as fertilizers or pesticides, can make their way into our bays and creeks via stormwater runoff. The EPA considers stormwater pollution the nation's greatest threat to clean water. We can reduce the amount of chemicals we put on our lawns. First, if you must fertilize, use slow-release fertilizer and follow the instructions for proper application rate. More is not better. Also remember, the new Suffolk County law states there is no fertilizer use from November 1st to April 1st. Also consider mulching your grass and setting your mowing blade height to 3 inches for a healthier lawn. For more information on how you can help, please visit www.suffolkstormwater.com. This has been a Cornell Marine Moment brought to you by Suffolk County and Cornell Cooperative Extension Marine Program.
Oh, yeah. It's 602? Wow. 601 or 602, something like that. And you're listening to radio station WUSB in Stony Brook. It's time once again for another exciting edition of Off the Wall.
We'll be right back.
And a very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. I'm Andy Goldstein here with you, joined tonight by Kyle.
Hi, E.
How you doing?
I'm pretty good. How are you?
Good. It's good to be cold again. It's good to be back in the Northeast where it's cold.
Yeah, it changes very quickly.
It does.
And the majority of the northern states are cold. But
Seems that way.
It's amazing how places that don't get cold still celebrate winter traditions.
Mm-hmm.
And the snowy and all of the things that were sort of diving right into at the precipice, the shopping spirit. We celebrate all those things, and you know, it's weird. I guess there's a sort of tongue-in-cheek thing when you're in places that get warm.
Well, okay, yeah. Let's tell the folks that we came from somewhere warm.
Yeah. We had been much lower in the continental U.S.
Yeah. Went down to Florida.
The grand old state of Florida.
We took another train. That's kind of cool. We took a train from New York all the way down to Florida. And, in fact, okay, I guess this is as good a time as any. If you listened to the show last week, you would have known that. If you listened to the show on the air last week, though, or live, you might not have known that because the middle 40 minutes of the show, because of a technical issue here at the radio station, did not air. But for those of you who only listen on the radio and don't listen online, I just would like to implore you for this particular show, go online and hear it because we broke our asses to put that show together. And it was frustrating for it not to air because of the technical issue. But you can hear the whole thing if you simply go to our website, which is www.2600.com/off the wall. And you will you'll see a choice for new shows. Click on new shows. That'll bring you all the November shows. And just go to November 21st, which was last week. And you'll hear us on an Amtrak train. Funny, the part that aired was when we were talking about walking through the Amtrak train, and then when the technical issue was finally resolved, we had finished walking through the train, so the whole middle part was just wiped out. But you'll hear the whole thing, and you'll hear us walking. I mean, it's not the most exciting thing in the world, granted, but we did risk our lives walking through cars of a moving train holding recording equipment. So yeah, show a little gratitude there.
Yeah, this is just a different way of telling a story, something we hadn't done in the past. And
no, we've done it in the past. We've walked through trains before. We're the only show that regularly walks through moving train cars, I've been told.
Okay, but in the U.S., it was the first time I think we've done that on a...
No, I think we've done it on Amtrak trains,
okay,
too.
On that route.
Again, Kyle, I think... No, actually, you're right on that. I don't think we ever took that particular route before. But, it was fun. Taking the train was it's always great. It's always a good time on moving
yeah.
rail cars.
Anyone, if you've not before taken a long trip, an overnight trip, do it if you can.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great way to go. It's different and it's way less stressful. We said this many times, but it's very pleasant. You get to just kind of walk around, relax, do all kinds of things, meet people from other parts of the country and actually talk to them instead of being annoyed by them.
We had a great conversation with that couple from Orlando who was traveling on the train from New York, just about all kinds of things. And, you know, politics does come up occasionally, and you find most people really are clued in on what's going on in the world, and it's just really kind of cool to make those connections.
Yeah, you have that shared experience, and you know everyone is talking about one or the other thing. Or maybe people have heard things that you aren't aware of, and that perspective just adds to your own, and it's really, really cool. So definitely, yeah, instead of being jabbed by someone or fighting over who can have the aisle seat or whatnot, this is a different way to go. And
you're referring to airplanes.
Yeah.
What most people over the holidays had to contend with.
Well,
and I'm so antisocial on planes and so very social on trains.
Yeah, it's it brings something out of you. And
you don't want me on a bus, though.
We did it right. I think also we planned so we weren't in the middle of the chaos. It gets crazy during, obviously, the holidays. People are going to different places and all of that. So, yeah, we have relatives that we wanted to visit in this area. And the other cool thing was we were going to bring stuff back. They donated some things, and we're going to get rid of them. And we said, hey, we'll take them. We could use them in our offices and in our lives.
Yeah, that was the plan, to go down there by train and come back up by truck and bring a whole lot of things back up with us. But the interesting thing, though, when we went down there, arriving, it was about maybe a little over 24 hours on the train. I think we left Sunday afternoon. We arrived Monday evening. But the train only goes to the eastern part of Florida. There is no train on the western part. Which is sad, because there are people on the western part, and I'm sure they'd like to be able to connect to the people on the eastern part as well. It's a bit frustrating.
Yeah, getting around in Florida is like it's very spread out, and there's a lot of vehicles, obviously, and we're unfamiliar. We've never really spent much time there. I've been there like once or twice before. So it's always interesting to see what all the fuss is about, and they've got some projects we've been looking into, and light rail, private rail. Once we got down there, we were very curious why and how this is developed. We also were very curious about the system that was disrupted from New Orleans, and
Well, we'll get to that. We'll get to that, because that's part of later on when we left Florida. Actually arriving in Florida, what were your impressions of the place? I mean, you've been there before, that's true, but I've only been there as a transit point for moving to someplace else. On my way to Cuba once, on my way back from Cuba just for a day, traveling through on a road trip cross country, things like that. But this was I went to Miami once for a few days, but this was the first time I'd ever been to another part of Florida and stayed there for a little while. And it's very different. I mean, first of all, you see things like wildcat crossing signs. I'm not used to that. You know, a big cat, like a bobcat or something?
Panthers.
Panthers. They cross the street, apparently, because they live there, too. So that was kind of weird. And also, everyone talks about alligators, because alligators are a thing down in Florida. That's so occasionally people get snatched up by an alligator, and that's kind of scary to think about. But any body of water is something that an alligator would take an interest in. But it goes beyond that, because idiots have released invasive species like pythons into the area. And those pythons have grown, and they're kind of screwing up the Everglades, which is an amazing place. It's huge. It's all around the area. But the pythons occasionally go out and grow. And in fact, there was a news piece of a python eating an alligator, which everyone was fascinated by. But it's really, it's not as cool as it sounds. It's bad for the environment when you have invasive species.
Yeah, people are very, very much aware of the sort of tropical environment and the different wildlife, as well as preserving it, and what is going on with that area. Obviously, flooding and different things like that are a concern. When we were coming in on the train, we noticed also the citrus groves and things like that that are important for the economy there. And mm-hmm. also, we were looking out for damage from the storm and storm cleanup. And the residences are interesting. There's really not very much variation, and you see sort of a dichotomy, sort of a social economic dichotomy. There's a lot of trailer parks and things like that one hand, and then a lot of various sort of well-to-do neighborhoods. And what we noticed were like these, I guess you call them planned. Or
planned communities,
managed communities,
very managed,
lots of leisure activity, and it's funny, it's strangely advertised and coded, but they're places for older people, and that's pretty much it. You don't see a lot of like youthful activity. There's a lot of recreation
with the
environment.
It was kind of subtle because, the place we were in, it's huge for one thing. They're talking thousands and thousands of homes, literally, with what they call villages inside this gated community. So you have one section of the community that is called one thing or another, and then another section called something else. And there, apparently there are themes, too. I didn't have enough of a chance to really explore and figure it all out. But it's kind of, I guess it's kind of like how a mall relates to a village square. You know, one is something that evolved fairly naturally over the course of decades or centuries even. And the other is something that was just kind of planted there and is really private property and you know, kind of not really the town square. It's a mall. And this is really kind of not really a village. It's a plan, as they say, planned community. But, yeah, it was subtle. You didn't see kids running around, but you got the impression that this was for older people. But it doesn't say that anywhere, not specifically. But I think that's what it is.
Yeah, and there's some truth that sort of synthesized the feeling. Obviously, it's a sort of ideal. It's an idealized concept of what life is. It doesn't have, I think, as much of that rough around the edges in as many places. That evolves over time when you have layers and layers of people building and moving and changing and running, having different types of establishments. There's a lot of chain sort of businesses. Very, very hard to pick out what is old and has been there for years and is sort of independent, and what is basically a part of a grander ideal, or like I said, something that is imagined as a concept.
Well, you know, I think the gate is pretty much the key. When you're on one side of the gate, that's where it's not something that's been there for a very long time. It's something that's been kind of planned. And on the outside of the gate, that's where you might see something that dates back further and is more independent. What I'm struck by, and this is not at all isolated to Florida, we see it here as well, is how people kind of gravitate towards being told what to do. You might be part of a co-op or a condo or something like that. You could live in an apartment building in New York City, and the same thing happens where you hire somebody to tell you what to do. And they're out there. They're saying, no, you can't have a garbage can with this color. You have to do this. You know, and this is a particular set of rules that you must follow, and you're basically paying these people to do that. And I always wonder why, you know, why are we always trying to live in places? It's kind of like socialism in a way, because you know you're living in a society where everything is you know, theoretically at least, for the common good. But the rules are kind of they kind of quash individuality. Like you can't put up decorations. You can't paint your house green. You know, all sorts of things like that. It's I'm always amazed by this because when I grew up, developments were the new thing. People used to live in houses before that, just independently built houses, and then things like the S section here in Stony Brook got built, and it's one of five designs, and it's all planned out. But nobody told you how to live. You could pretty much you could add a couple of stories. You probably get permits to do it, but you could paint your house whatever color you wanted. You could grow all sorts of different plants. And now, we just have more and more control over what we cannot do. In fact, I've read some horror stories in other places that I have not been to, where people actually come into your house and look at the color of the water of your toilet. I don't think I'm making that up. I think that's a real thing. So people want conformity. They want this socialization that just kind of speaks to every semblance of their daily routine. And telling them, what they can and cannot do. And I'm speaking in extremes. This was a very pleasant environment. People were happy, and the houses really were quite well built, in fact. But I just wonder, why we're always inviting this. Why not just have houses, built and have them live in whatever way they choose to live.
Yeah, you definitely are trading some sort of individuality and that choice and being able to do certain things, which it doesn't seem it's sort of counterintuitive, and it sort of saps the communities of their individuality and the things that make neighborhoods really, I guess you might say, quirky or really interesting. And mm-hmm. this, again, is from someone or a group of people's their envision of what life should be like, and everyone sort of buys into that, and any deviation is considered unsightly.
Yeah, and consider this, for instance. Everybody buys their house from the same people, pretty much. You can't hire somebody else to fix up your house. You have to go through their people, you know. You have to go through their landscapers. I don't even know if you can cut your own grass. I imagine you probably can, but it just seems like, you know, everything is taken care of, which is what most people want. I get that. But it just seems to me, I'm kind of an outcast in society wherever I go. I kind of just like to do my own thing. And planned environments like that makes it a little bit difficult for individuals sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah. It's very different. Strange for me, too. I think so. I don't know where you get to. I think maybe at a certain point you just you feel like someone, you know, there's a, having it thought out like that is you know, less stress for you, and you can do other things but yeah, I don't know. I like a little more grit and that sort of thing, but people seem to be very happy there, and but also stressed out about funny things. You know, because they're in, you can get into these kinds of worlds and be your concerns. You sort of trade other concerns for even sillier ones. You know, and I think that's kind of that's a downside of it.
Uh-huh.
You know, you become obsessed with, you know, your lawn being a half inch shorter than your neighbor's or whatever. Whatever becomes a priority.
I'm familiar with this.
That's
yes.
what you end up spending your time on.
Uh-huh.
And meanwhile, you know, some places, you know, they've got a little cobweb, you know, and they've got, you know, creatures and things that are a part of that space. Or, you know, you don't necessarily have the time to go polishing, you know, I don't know, every little thing. All the time, it seems like you have this ideal, and then you have this new job and responsibility of maintaining that ideal.
Yeah, when I grew up, we didn't cut our grass very often. In fact, we didn't even have a lawnmower. I think the only lawnmower we had was a manual one. You ever see one of those? They don't have an engine.
Yeah, a push lawnmower.
I add that to the list of things I got made fun of in school. But yeah, so my lawn was terrible. I never would have survived in a planned community as a kid. Not that I think there's many kids in planned communities. But I just wonder, you know, where is this going? In 20 more years, will there be things like that? And what else will they be telling us what we're supposed to do and not do and things like that? And also, you know, you brought up an interesting point earlier. It was it's kind of like segregation in a way because, you know, there are no poor neighbors. You can't really be a poor neighbor, right?
Yeah, and it also ageism. You know, it's one of these markets or demographics where you can blatantly say nobody like this,
mm-hmm.
and that doesn't fly.
Well,
in
you
a
can't
lot of other...
say it. You can't say it out loud. But
well, in some cases you can.
Really,
especially when you get into like senior type places. But just in general, places...
Wait, if I'm a cranky senior, I can say. I don't want any of those Latvians across the street or anything like that. I want a non-Latvian neighborhood. If it's, you know, that's I can
if
resist.
It's that type of community, maybe it's also a class thing because you don't have any subsidies or mandate for affordable housing or you know a certain percentage of that community just to show that. Or in recognition of the need for that as well. So there's a lot of factors that can basically carve out a certain type of person that comes in there, or say condos in like a lot of tech centers. This also reminds me, I heard a story recently of, I don't know if it was Bill Gates or some of these tech oligarchs or whatever, are planning the first smart community in the U.S. I think that one's going on in Arizona.
Oh, for God's sake.
Yeah. Really
smart? I just know whatever this is, I am not going to think of it as very smart. But
yeah. Can you imagine? No. And this thing we've been talking about now, hyper technologically connected and all sorts of sustainable things. Remember the bodega vending machines, stuff like that, all kinds of autonomous things and robots. And that's great, but it's also limiting. And again, where will the individuality, the sort of those details, how will those play out? And what kinds of people will you create when you're engineering things down to every detail and monitoring and sort of connecting everything on such a wide scale? What types of people? What are these cities? What will they become?
That's right.
Fascinating. Yeah. It's fascinating.
It is. Our chief engineer Frank is here. Hey, Frank.
Hey.
Wow. Guest appearance.
We're back this week, by the way.
I heard.
You heard? Okay. Yeah, because we're not on recording this week. We're actually live in the studio.
We were on the train last week.
We were actually sitting listening to, or trying to listen to the show, but there was a recording of us on the train. Yes, it's a complex thing to explain. But
I heard the beginning and end of it.
Yeah, most people did. That's
those parts worked. Yes.
All right. Well, yeah. Now we're spending an awful lot of time in Florida, and we did travel throughout another good part of the country. In fact, I count the number of states we went through. Do you remember what number that was? I think it was 11, was it?
Yeah, on the order of, I think, 8 to 10 or at least. 11 sounds right when you factor in the trip down. Yeah.
And if you count Washington, D.C., that's something else. That's not a state.
Yeah, that would be a district or something, yes.
11 states and a district.
Yeah.
That's pretty impressive.
Quite a trip.
So yeah, and it was complicated by that whole charade with our rental company canceling our reservation, not understanding what a reservation is. Apparently, I've gotten that Seinfeld sketch sent to me many many times after tweeting about this. But yeah, we reserved the truck and after going all the way down there, they said we don't have any trucks, so we had to find a substitute, and we did. And then after that, because of all the publicity, apparently they contacted us saying, "Hey, we found you a truck," but it was too late, and so we went with a different company and drove a different truck.
But they assured us they'd be able to help us in the future sometime. So that's good to know that they're going to figure out how to run their business. At some point,
yeah. But, it worked out because we got a pretty good deal with the truck that we got, and we started our voyage up the west coast of Florida, driving very fast through Tampa because they have a serial killer there they have not yet caught, and basically kept going all the way up to Tallahassee, a place I'd never been to before, at least not that I know of. And that turns out to be a real kind of cool city. It's there are liberal bastions of Florida, believe it or not, and this is one of them. And also, it was cold. We got there and it was chilly. So apparently, there are parts of Florida that are not warm and tropical.
Yeah, there's like this point you get to actually in state that where it does become quite a bit cooler. I thought you were joking about the serial killer. That was crazy. And then you show me an article. Thankfully, we didn't stop there for a break. And, I did enjoy Tallahassee. They had great coffee, which is always important when you're on a road trip.
Well, you always find coffee places that are unique in whatever place we happen to be in. And it's really cool because they're all different. And you meet cool people there. And you always do. This is the thing, that I really can't stand hearing from a lot of my fellow compatriots who label entire regions. They label the South. They label Alabama is one example. We're getting to that next because we drove through Alabama. But labeling them as a bunch of backwoods hillbillies, and it's, no offense to backwoods hillbillies who also have quite a few interesting people amongst their midst. People are people no matter where you go. How would you like it if New Yorkers were all labeled just because of, say, one New Yorker who happens to be in office right now. Imagine if the whole rest of the world thought of New Yorkers that way. It's interesting, too, because you do see New Yorkers being chastised and condemned by the right wing all the time. In fact, you know, we listen to conservative radio, which is all there is on the AM dial, it seems, late at night. And they're always talking about the New York liberals or the coastal elites or people like that. And they, you know, they somehow exclude Donald Trump from that equation. They, you know, the person that we know well that came from our midst in this region, they're giving him a pass. He's okay, even though he stands for nothing they stand for. And, you know, if they don't realize that now, they will realize that in the future, I'm pretty sure. But again, even what I'm saying now can be seen as talking down. And that's what I think we don't realize a lot of times, that we're telling people how it's going to be, that they don't know any better, that they're stupid, that we're smart. And what you get from that, you just get a reaction to that and not much else. And I think that's kind of what's happening right now with this whole Roy Moore thing in Alabama. We're talking about the child molesting, alleged child molesting Senate candidate who is the Republican candidate that Trump is backing, who is running against the Democrat who helped prosecute the Ku Klux Klan and is obviously a better candidate. So you have this kind of mood of defiance there now, because everyone is telling them what to do. And even when you're wrong, lots of times you'd rather be wrong than talk down to. And I think that's kind of the spirit that you see in many of these places throughout the country, where people feel they're being talked down to, and so they just want to react against those people more than anybody else. And sometimes it doesn't work out very well for them.
In the sense that they shut down the discussion at all? Or
in the sense that they elect somebody that really does a lot of harm to them, maybe more than anybody else. You know?
Yeah.
It's, you know, we're not immune from that either. We're not immune from not acting in our best interest. But I think, you know, saying that this is what people have to do, this is, you know, the only way that people can logically act, I think that's a mistake, and one that we keep making. And so, you know, we got to Alabama. First of all, I want to mention Tallahassee. We were in Tallahassee. We saw the train station you mentioned, where Amtrak used to run between New Orleans and Orlando, and that was taken out when Sandy came through and rebuilt. But it's a political issue now of starting the train up again. So that's something we're going to focus on, getting that train line running again, because those kind of links are important. But yeah, we then drove into Alabama, not knowing what to expect, kind of scared actually, as we always are when we go through some of these states. But again, those fears are unfounded. Everybody there was, you know, nice to us. Nobody made us feel uncomfortable in any sense. I did not see a single sign for Roy Moore in the entire place. Of course, I didn't see a sign for Doug Jones either, the Democrat. But it wasn't the way that it was portrayed as a bastion of racism and you know, far right politics. It's very different from that, and what I'm trying to say is there are cool people everywhere you go, and there's enlightenment everywhere you go, and you can have decent conversations and be accepted for who you are. Now, obviously, there are places where that is difficult, where that is not as easy as we're used to, but the people still exist, and change happens everywhere, and it's something that we just, I think, really forget sometimes.
Yeah. And there's so much that is good and interesting to see and experience there that you would really miss out. And that's, I think, the most important thing to me is visiting and, you know, expanding your horizons, seeing things that are different, maybe being a little uncomfortable. I was looking for things that were going to make me uncomfortable. I wanted to be uncomfortable. But, no, I felt very comfortable and... Yeah, Alabama was interesting, but it was really good for us to go through there and visit all the things that there were to do.
Uh-huh. Yeah, definitely. We made a point of going to Montgomery. driving through there and just kind of exploring the whole place. We didn't spend the night in Alabama, did we? I think we drove through to South Carolina, made our way towards Clemson, I think, which is where I was once before.
Oh, yeah, that was a garbage town.
Well, okay, you could say that. You know what? There wasn't much redeeming there because it's a college town, but it's a college town where football is pretty much the religion all the time.
This is all they care about.
They have a radio station there in Clemson. It's 105.5. It's a commercial station. All they do is talk about Clemson sports, college sports. That's all they do, 24 hours a day. They have a Clemson station, too, 88.1. And it's really, you know, it's really cool to have a good college radio station, and that's one of them. Boy, they are fixated on sports. And, when I went there in the 1980s, I noticed the same thing. They have this 80,000-seat football stadium right in the middle of campus, and the community all around them is basically obsessed with the sport. You have tiger paws painted on the street everywhere. Everything is something about the football team. And it's not isolated to Clemson. When we were in Alabama, when we were in Montgomery, we just happened to grab food in the place that had a college football game on. And unknown to us, Alabama was playing Auburn, which is also in Alabama, but for some reason some teams get named after the state and some don't. Everybody in the place was rooting for Alabama, and Auburn was a little further down the road that we were heading down later on. And we got caught up in the whole thing, and of course Auburn won in the end, and I think Alabama was undefeated. You know, I learned all this. They were undefeated up until this point, and Auburn is basically triumphant. And we were driving down the interstate, and we passed the buses carrying all the football players back, police escort and everything. So you get caught up in this whole world of excitement that you have no sense of here. Every single place we went to had their college football thing going on, and it's just something that I found to be very weird and strange and kind of off-putting. But also, you have to kind of see what people are excited by down there.
Well, these towns that you go to, you think, okay, well, what is there to do here? Well, these traditions end up being the things that people have to do, and it's funny, even in light of like technology or all the other ways people can connect and communicate virtually, there are still sacred things and important things in these parts of the country that, you know, people love. The healthy rivalry and the rooting for your team or having an event maybe at your house, inviting people over, and that tradition around whatever it is, if it's a sport or a certain game, a certain division. I don't know. It's not something I enjoy as much as other things, but for a lot of the country, this is a incredibly important cultural activity. And yeah, I got into it. I know enough about it that it's cool to see teams that aren't in the like professional leagues, and yeah, with some of these schools, can't relate to that being the only thing in some entire towns and so on. But I guess in college, it's important. I don't know. Stony Brook Stadium is only a little bit smaller than the one at Clemson.
Oh, that's not true. It's tiny. It's tiny compared to that. 80,000 seats. It's bigger than Citi Field and Yankee Stadium put together, I think.
Yeah, and maybe almost the size of the one where Auburn and Alabama were playing. But
I'm not. Yeah, we didn't even see that one. But you know, every one of these places has one of these stadiums. And you know, you've heard my spiel about colleges and why is this? How does this relate to college in any way? But it's part of the culture. And I think you nailed it by saying, yeah, you have to try and just sort of dive into it, whether you are into it yourself or not. We talk about international football, you know, soccer all the time. I think we should look at this in the same way as something that is of interest to a large number of people. How does it work? How does it all? You know, I can't figure out the whole conference thing, like who gets to go to what bowl and who's the champion. And it just seems like everyone is playing for the championship somewhere. But it was fascinating to watch. It really was fascinating to see the reaction.
Yeah, we had a lot of good food. I mean, we could do a whole show on food.
Oh, wow, yes.
But definitely, when we were in Montgomery, we had incredible barbecue there and all that kind of stuff. It's great to also make that a part of exploring. And you know, it's I don't know, something about Southern food. It really hit me that like this is fantastic. And everywhere we I don't think we had a bad meal.
No. Well, we didn't go to any chains, so that's one of the secrets there.
Avoided them, yeah.
Yeah, you go to local places, and you choose wisely, and you'll have very hearty fare. You'll have really good things, and we found it to be the case pretty much everywhere we went.
And you got to order the stuff that's indigenous, the stuff that's unique, and it is sort of a specialty or that kind of thing that the local favorites are important to try and see what it's about. That's part of the community itself too.
We're talking about the South. We're talking about Thanksgiving and traveling throughout the country and trains and things like that. If you want to join the conversation, feel free. We'll see the light blinking and we'll bring you in. 631-632-WUSP, 631-632-9872.
What state was after Alabama?
After Alabama, we went to South Carolina. That's where we saw Clemson. And that's the other thing. We stayed in all these, we only stayed, I think, 3 nights in different places on our way back. But they were always super cheap. I'm talking, like $50, for a room. In fact, the last place we stayed, which was somewhere in Virginia, I'm getting ahead, I know, but we stayed at, in fact, it was Charlottesville, Virginia.
It was
places.
Charlottesville, yeah.
We kind of got drawn into that without, we were trying to avoid it.
It was not intentional.
It's like a comet and the sun, you just kind of get sucked in. We stayed in the place there, and they were so friendly to us that not only did they give us an even cheaper rate than we agreed to pay, but they gave us an extra room because apparently they weren't satisfied with how the house cleaning had done their jobs the day before, and they just wanted to stick it to them by giving them another room to clean up late. I don't know what the actual reasoning was, but
we didn't feel we deserved it. But it was sort of they were adamant. They insisted that we accept this.
And they also wanted to separate us, too, because I got questioned at 4 in the morning. You got questioned at 3 in the morning by the alt-right. And
those lamps, the heat lamps. That's funny the way they, yeah.
But, even that is special in its own way. And, everything
didn't
was
tell them anything.
Everything was amazing. It really was, from coffee to food to college football. And, oh, my God.
Charlottesville has its own football thing. What?
They do.
That was crazy, too. Everybody had their last game of the season, too. That was another remarkable thing.
I didn't know that. I didn't know there was a last game of the season, but at the end of November, I guess that's when their season ends. That's the other thing. When we were passing through Clemson, like Alabama was playing Auburn. Well, Clemson was playing South Carolina, even though they're in South Carolina, and they were playing somewhere else in South Carolina, so there weren't crowds of people we had to deal with there. We always were avoiding the crowds somehow.
A lot of, what else do we hear? Radio. Religious radio?
Yeah, that's what I wanted to get into. There's
sure.
Crazy religion. I mean, we're traveling on a Sunday.
Yeah.
And, wow, you just hear... I even wrote down some of the preachers' names. Some of them are just out of this world. They are, shouting and running all around the room. And great stories, too, telling all kinds of stories about their upbringing and encounters that they've had. And it's, it's not something you just turn the dial away from. Because it's fascinating, it's interesting, it's a different culture, and sometimes you just have to listen.
Yeah, you could say, you think talk radio is creative storytelling in these parts of the country. The preaching and stuff on a Sunday, really incredible, the accent and just the passion wow, it stirs you. You want to get up and stand up and... you can't do that driving. But anyway, it really, really captivates you. And I guess there's a lot of billboards, too. A lot of advertising, a lot of stuff talking about what Jesus thinks about what you're doing. Just a lot of roadside distraction while you're driving about what God thinks.
Yes, a lot of that. And also things like in Florida, for instance, there are billboards everywhere about vasectomies. I don't know what that was all about.
Yeah, but everybody's trying to get their tubes tied.
They're encouraging everyone to get vasectomies. And in Alabama, like I said, I didn't see a single Roy Moore sign or Doug Jones sign, but I did see plenty of billboards that just said vote on December 12th. And I thought that was interesting, just getting people to vote. And I got to say, you know, in light of all the comments and observations I've made about the people and the places, I think people in Alabama are going to do the right thing. I really do. I think they will vote in their best interest and not vote for that guy. But I don't feel right saying, you know, you have to do this or you're stupid. It just doesn't feel right, you know.
Yeah, there's a sense of responsibility, I think. There's some definite concern in the air. It was palpable, definitely,
yeah.
When we were there. I think those vote billboards were by vote.org. I didn't really look up anything. I don't know what kind of organization they are, but that was also remarkable. We didn't see a lot of those candidates being pushed or anything really on the emphatic side, even like on bumper stickers or anything like that. It was hard to spot anything like that.
We were
certainly looking.
I didn't see a single bumper sticker either. Wow.
One other thing, we mentioned radio. Community radio is really interesting.
Yes.
It's few and far between. You know, there's a lot of a certain culture, as I've said. There's, you know, maybe not be your culture, but you're going to experience a lot of it, religious or whatever it is that's different. We found some incredible stations.
We did.
And I think we'll compile this, or we're going to keep track, because we're always looking for other types of basically what we have here, which is community and music and people trying new things, free form, as it's so often described.
Yeah, it's frustrating sometimes when you're traveling, and it feels like the only things you hear on the radio are religion and lousy music, and like I mentioned before, on AM radio, just nothing but right-wing talk. And then you find this mecca of radio, usually from a college, but sometimes a community station as well, where they're playing all kinds of things and talking about all sorts of subjects. And that is just enough to really make you feel so much better about where you are. And you realize, you know, there are people here, people, you know, that you would really get along with, people who might not fit in as well, to that region, as they would in some other place. They need this. They need this more than you can imagine. And even something like NPR, if you get an NPR affiliate that's broadcasting different subjects, different conversations, things from other places, what that does to people in these small communities, places where individuality is not as valued as much, or where politically they're going in a completely different direction, this is really, really important, and that's why supporting it is so important as well. So, you know, we were able to find those stations, though, in various places.
Yeah, 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 and it's so true. You realize how strong a statement music can be, too. You get band names that have really, you know, funny things like Anti-Flag, you know.
Uh-huh.
It's amazing. I'm just thinking of other ones we heard, and just the subject matter, how strong and powerful that can be in an area that's not really playing a lot of that, or they're playing top 40 or other things, and that's incredible. And it's someone whose program, that is their perspective, sort of going out into the ether, and that's an incredible joy. And you get interesting stuff. So that is, too, really powerful, these different bands. You realize, wow, this person's programming this, but, wow, that band ended up being – they're an incredible statement or political, or maybe they're not trying to be, but they just have a sort of funny name.
Mm-hmm.
But in
yes.
this context, it's really powerful, even just hearing, you know, a playlist or whatnot. So that's fascinating.
So many little acts of rebellion, just by playing a song on a radio station, that can be an act of rebellion that we take for granted in many places. Now, we were in Charlottesville. We mentioned that. We just wound up in Charlottesville, and we found a great station there that was from the university at Charlottesville. In fact, I believe they're the station that we aired College Radio Day here a couple of months ago, and a good part of the excerpts had to do with the aftermath from the march in Charlottesville and a particular college radio station that hosted a seminar community gathering. And it was really good, really powerful, and it was I'm pretty sure it was the station we were listening to.
Yeah, was that WJRT or it was Jefferson's?
TJU, I think. Yeah, Thomas Jefferson University.
Yeah,
I think
TJU, WTJU. They were really incredible, and we looked up some of that stuff. They'd been doing College Radio Day, I think, since 2012, but this was particularly interesting. And they'd done basically sort of Day of Unity kind of stuff and that kind of programming, which you would expect in a town that probably needed a bit of calm at that moment.
Yeah, so at that particular time, to have an outlet in your community where people can express themselves, it becomes so vital. And that's, you know, just a whole other aspect of college radio or community radio that we might not have appreciated up until that point when something like that happened. You know, we talk about emergencies when, you know, there's a tornado or a hurricane or something happening, but also social issues when we need to be able to express ourselves. And again, we take that for granted here because we have different outlets and we're always doing this here at USB. But the other places, it becomes so much more vital when the resources aren't quite as abundant. And, you know, on that subject also, you know, we're talking about radio and how it's great to have different voices and all kinds of diversity and even things that we don't agree with. Yeah, everything's about football. Everything's about religion. Everything is conservative. Fine, you know, have your voice as long as there are other outlets as well. But one thing that really, you know, gets me on this is how religious radio stations are allowed to be in that non-commercial area of between 88.1 and 91.9. That is something that is basically for community or college stations. Now, yeah, you can say, you know, religion is non-profit, but look around you. There is so much money in religion, and it's one subject. It's one topic that is always being crammed down your throat constantly. There's no diversity. There's no acceptance of other sides. It's one platform over and over and over again. It doesn't ever stop. And when you go around town, you see billboards. You see billboards for 90.1 FM. You know, it's not supposed to be a billboard for a non-commercial radio station. They're the ones with no money. You know, they're supposed to be listener-supported and representing the community and all that. You see them with their vans and their trucks and their huge buildings and things like that. And every time they do that, every time they take up a frequency in the non-commercial area, the non-commercial band, that's one less community station or college station that can have that frequency, that can have that range. At one point, I think it might have been in Georgia, I counted seven religious stations between 88.1 and 91.9, not one community radio station, not one. And most of those religious stations were playing something that was being piped in from someplace else. Wasn't even local.
Let's be honest. It's Christian, and I know you said that earlier.
You're right. Yes.
The distinction's there. It is really only Christian radio. I mean, you do not hear the Jewish station right alongside it, or the
no Muslim
Sikhs broadcasting their sermons, or and on and on, like Muslim,
Muslim stations.
It's not a variety of religious stations.
But if there were, I would make the same complaint, because, you know, fundamentalism on any level, I think, is damaging to individuality. But also just taking over something is also really, really bad.
That's fair.
Okay, listen, we're out of time. I want to go out with a song that I heard growing up. You know, you don't hear Southern rock in the South very much. And I wonder why that is. You hear a lot of classic rock, but you don't hear a lot of Southern music. But you might have heard this song, Sweet Home Alabama. You know, a lot of the lyrics here I've also thought of in a certain way, but apparently there are different things that Lynyrd Skynyrd were doing in this song. For instance, when they mention how everybody loves the governor, they actually say boo, boo, boo afterwards, which apparently means that they don't really love the governor. I don't know. They say the lyrics of this song were misinterpreted and labeled in a particular way. It's up to you if they are or not, but this does represent something, and it's, for me, it represents memories of growing up on Long Island. I'm not sure what it means to people in Alabama, but I do know that we had fun going through the South, driving a big truck up here, and we're back, and until the next adventure, when we'll be doing something else.
Watch out.
That's right. We'll see you next week. OTW at 2600.com. Stay tuned for Finn. Good night.